Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
True story. This week, mid-email to Sarah and Adam to try to talk with them about giving a little testimony this morning. The computer on which I do all the work for the church and all the work for everything shut down. Ooh, there you go. Right as I was emailing an IT guy. I did try turning it off and back on, by the way. Many, many, many times, in fact. And it would not reboot. And it would not reboot. And so I brought it to the computer store over in Sentara and had them take a look at it. Now, this is a computer repair store, but it's also a computer sales store, right? And so they have all of the shiny Macintosh computers out. So I brought in my somewhat more clunky MacBook Pro, and I brought it to the service desk, and I filled out the thing, and they ran a test on it, and it's definitely a graphics processor or something. And the guy says, well, I'm going to take a look. And so he takes the computer in the back for a little bit. It's still there, by the way. But he takes it in the back for a little bit, leaving me on the showroom floor. Now, by the time he came back out, I was unprepared to hear anything he had to say because I had convinced myself that what I really needed was a brand new computer. And it didn't really matter what he was going to say. Oh, they're so shiny, and they look so good. They're so much lighter weight. How do they do that? All that same processing speed, more processing speed, and they're lighter, and they're newer, and they're shinier. And the guy comes back out, and he says, I've got great news for you. This is the problem, this graphics processor thing. There's a recall. For this model of this computer, we can fix it for you for free. I was only slightly disappointed. Okay, I was quite disappointed, but also relieved because, you know, I did not have the money to drop on a new computer. So it's still being fixed. But what a nice, that was a great response. That was a great moment where, oh, thank goodness. But I confess that a little bit of me went, oh. And I turned to those shiny computers and I was like, see you later, friends. Bummer. There's a little bit of the prodigal child in all of us. A little bit of that, I want that instant gratification. I want that thing now. And oh, are we so good as a society in catering to that with sales and shiny new computers right where you're trying to get yours fixed. Shiny new cars, you know, shiny new everything. We're really good with that four-letter word, sale. Because those computers were on sale through the end of October. That was yesterday. So if I was going to buy one, I'd better buy it right now. Now's the time. The computer broke right when they were having a sale. How did that happen? Ah, no. But there's a little bit of the prodigal child in all of us. Except when I think about the saints in my faith, when I think about the people who instructed me in faith, who taught me how to be a person of faith, the first people I think of are my grandmothers. Two, in some ways very different and in some ways very similar, women of God. My Catholic grandmother was very simple in her faith and yet deeply, deeply committed to it. So she didn't somehow talk much about it, and yet it was everything she did. Everything was revolving around her need to be at Mass on Sunday morning or on Saturday night. She was very, very precise in her prayers and her saying of the rosary and her commitment. And whenever we went to Mass with her, she had shiny quarters for whichever grandchildren were with her. And she'd give us each a shiny quarter for each of the offerings. There were two that I remember. And we'd put those in. And she was always pre-prepared for that. She never talked about what she believed. She just did with her time and her gifts. Every day, every week, every moment seemed like she was living in this prayerful place. My Lutheran grandmother, in addition to playing the organ for our church, for a very long time, she also was one of those folk who lived by a budget. And didn't just live by a budget because that helped her life, but was very clear that this was a God thing. And so when I graduated from college and I was starting to live on my own and I saw my grandmother at Christmas time, I remember her saying, "Now, Rebecca, one of the first things you need to do is you need to set aside your gift to God, then you need to make a budget, and you need to stick to it, and all of those things." It's not that much of the prodigal child in my grandmother's. And maybe that's because they're products of an earlier time and of a more cautious time. They were growing up right after World War I and the Depression. And so their parents were teaching them to be frugal as well. And they were learning that as their kind of mother's milk. This is just how life goes. And so they were very cautious and careful with their resources, their time, their talent, and their treasure. That's what I learned from my grandmothers, in addition to their deep faith, was that each of them gave to God from their time, their talent, and their treasure as best they could and in different ways and from what little they each had. But they made utmost devotion in their daily life, and they framed their whole life around this. That was their priority. And everything they did came from a sense of who they were as believers or as disciples of God. That's their greater vision, and that's what a prodigal child lacks. Now, prodigal doesn't mean lost and then found. That's what we seem to think nowadays when we say somebody's a prodigal because we're used to this story. Prodigal means spendthrift. We might, in fact, say, and I sometimes do in other sermons, that the parent in this passage is also a prodigal. You know, indiscriminately distributing grace and things like that might tell us something about God. But the prodigal child is lacking something that the prodigal parent gets. The parent gets that it's all about grace, it's all about love, it's all about that God stuff. But when we're in that place of being somewhat foolish or somewhat desperate, you know, like when you're grocery shopping when you're already hungry and you tend to buy more, or when you're computer shopping when yours is already broken and you're more likely to spend more because you're desperate for a fix, right? You got to fix something. We're lacking a larger vision of who we are in God. See, the older child kind of knows who he is. He's got his life figured out and planned out. We can like it or not, and we don't all have to go into the family business and take over the family land. But he's got a plan for his life, and he knows what he's going to do. The prodigal child is living in the now, living large and living lavishly, but without a sense of what that means for him. Who is he? Who does God want him to be? Who knows? Don't have time for that now. And what I really think the prodigal child lacks is not self-control, but a vision of who they are and who they are called to be. And if we have that vision, then we can make decisions based on that. Because I believe that how we spend our time and our talents, and yes, our wealth or our meager resources, is a sacred question. And it's a sacred question framed by who are we called to be in God. So my grandmother knew that she was called to be a devout Catholic, and so how she spent her time was making sure she had allotted. My grandmother knew that who she was called to be was a devout Lutheran, and so how she spent her time was making sure that she was prepared to play the music for the worship service. We do this with our decisions, with all of what we do, framing it in who we are called to be. Sometimes we talk about money like it's bad. It's a wrong thing or a bad thing. Money's not a wrong thing or a bad thing. We just get to make decisions about it. John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist movement, said, "Earn all you can." That's right, the Methodist founder said you should earn all the money you can. That doesn't sound very monk-ish to me. And then he said, "Save all you can. Save all you can. And then give all you can." Ah, well, now we see. There's nothing wrong with earning, there's nothing wrong with saving, and there's certainly nothing wrong with giving. But the way we make decisions about how we do those things reflects our commitments. And for Wesley, that meant being as generous as he could possibly be, and as wise and frugal as he could possibly be. And he was meticulous about this stuff. It can be hard, but when we start with our purpose and our vision, then we can have a better sense of how to plan and make these decisions. So I've given you a bunch of resources, and yes, they are taken largely from the Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey, and they're part of the stewardship program campaign that Adam Hamilton has put out, Enough, which is our series these few weeks. So one is the insert in your bulletin that has the Enough logo on the top. This is for you. For you and your family, for you on your own, this is for you. I don't need to want to ever get to see this. This is for you. One side asks about your goals and who you feel you're called to be. And I encourage you to think about it, pray about it. What is your life purpose? You know, just some little questions. What is your life purpose? What goals would help you accomplish that? Again, this is for ongoing reflection. This is not like a pop quiz that you fill out in 5 minutes. And then we think about some financial goals that support that as we're thinking about, I love what you said, Sarah, about telling money where to go instead of wondering where it went, right? We're making decisions about our resources so that we're more in control of them. And what do you need to do in the next 12 months or in the next couple years or before retirement or now that you're in retirement? So there's some kind of short, mid, long-range goals. And then on the back is the budget worksheet that is almost word for word what my grandmother told me when I graduated from college. I mean, this is just almost exactly it. And some suggestions about what percentage of your income you might spend on things. So again, resources for you. The card with a ribbon, which you can leave with a ribbon, or you could cut it on the sides and make it like a business card size so you could slip it into your pocket or your wallet, contains the key principles that Sarah and Adam were talking about and that are suggested for how we can take control of ourselves and our resources, make them serve the purpose and the vision that God's called us to do instead of the other way around. And so those are, as we've mentioned, on this little card, putting God first in living and giving. By setting that aside first, I know we get to the end of the month, and that's one of the first things to go, right? Well, I'll give God whatever's left. We'll talk about that later. The budgeting, simplifying our lifestyle, which we're going to talk about more next week, creating an emergency fund in case your computer crashes, or in case there's a medical emergency or some other kind of emergency, reducing debt over time, gradually, making a plan for doing that. There are different ways to do that. And then having long-term savings for the bigger needs in life. I'm going to add a seventh principle. It's really the first principle, just said again. But I'm going to add a seventh principle because I think seven is that sacred number that we shoot for. And that is bring it all back again to the question of who we are in God. Bring it all back around again. You know, it's sort of like the scientific process. You have the theory, and then you try it out, and then you evaluate it and ask, is my life living it out in a way that is in keeping with the call I believe that God's placed in my life? Am I serving as best I can with what I have, whatever we have? It doesn't have to be much. The saints in my life were not people who were wealthy. They were not people who went on extravagant vacations, nor were they people who went on mission trips. They were not people who gave extravagant amounts of money for shiny cars, nor were they people who gave extravagant amounts of money to the church. They were people who gave what they had, their time, their talent, and their treasure as they had it. And they gave because they knew who they were called to be in God. So I encourage us to cast for ourselves a vision of who God calls us to be, that we might be wise and saints to someone else in encouraging them, and that we might live lives that fill us with joy and purpose. Amen.